Call for order. And issue number one, address the draft number four. Are you going to take that one first, Dave, or?
There were a few things, some things that Siobhan pointed out in a memo to me here that she just handed me before the meeting, and there were some things that I thought had changed on the draft that maybe didn't get changed. There was a couple of things, though, that are on this memo that she's handed me that maybe we need to clarify this again. But,
okay, what page are we on and what
Page one of the draft.
99.01.
99.01, yes, perfect. I welcome Vivian, by the way.
Thank you.
And so you're aware, Vivian, since it's the first one of your these meetings for you. We have Paul, is it Slotemaker?
Yeah.
Slotemaker of Northwest Wireless Association joining us on the telephone.
And
you
have consultant, or?
Paul?
Yeah, hello.
Do you want to introduce yourself real quick? We have a new subcommittee member who was just asking who you are.
Okay, yeah. So my name is Paul Slotemaker, and I'm working with the Northwest Wireless Association, which is kind of a volunteer organization of folks that are in the wireless communications industry, to try to work with the jurisdictions on code rewrites just like your own. Trying to get some input, kind of be a resource for wireless information and kind of an industry resource, make sure the code operates well, just provide some input, obviously from the industry perspective, but not here to tell you what to do, but just answer, mainly here to answer questions and give you guys some of our feedback.
Okay.
With the experience that we've had with
those
like these.
All right. Thank you. First of all, looking at the draft, a couple of things to clarify. I was under the impression that our definitions of a wireless communication facilities would include cellular PCS as part of subsection 99030. Sub O, where we say cellular PCS is part of the definition of wireless communications facilities. And I recall that we were not going to repeat that repeatedly throughout the ordinance. Siobhan, your notes reflect otherwise.
Yeah, maybe I'm incorrect. I thought what I had brought up last time is, first of all, the fact that it's in parentheses makes it not as strong. And we had, I thought we had specifically
which
said...
Which is the part I thought I'd taken out.
Oh, okay. It's just that the words wireless communication facility are used, and actually you'd almost... I don't see it clearly defined that when we use the words wireless communication facility, we are only talking about, not including, but only talking about cellular PCS, because that's all that we're authorized to regulate here. So I don't...
That works for me, representing public safety and other forms of communications. You're saying this is only pertaining to cellular and PCS.
What's PCS?
I'm unclear.
Let me answer.
I thought
it's the latter form of cellular. As far as radio in general and the public, it's all one of the same, but it's a different license entity. The main concern is the frequency is different. So there's 800 and PCS is like 1900. They ran out of spectrum and granted another chunk of it, but it generally is the same other than frequencies.
Okay, this is only phones that doesn't do anything with computers?
Correct.
Is
there a
functional or regulatory problem with calling things wireless communication facilities? As far as you can tell.
No,
I haven't read how many other ordinances that use that term. So, and again, I'm sort of thinking of the public who has to read this thing. They know what it means.
It's listed differently in the TCA.
Okay.
Wireless communication facilities are listed differently than telecommunications are.
Okay. So if we want to call O in 030, wireless communications facility will mean a cellular PCS on staff facility or something like that.
Yeah, it's great to find you.
Then we can use them interchangeably per this ordinance, correct?
Sure.
That was my understanding, and I thought that's where I was getting to. But.
Yeah, and I cannot see any other reason why not. That's very clear.
Yeah, if it's straight out defined that way, then yes.
Okay. Yeah, and I've got to confess, there are some things here that I'm pretty sure that I changed in my draft, and either they didn't get saved or what, but they were in response to committee concerns last time, and
some
I actually clarified that.
Name, so.
Bob, doesn't I actually clarify it says facility synonymous?
Well, we kind of use that shortened word of facility because there are parts sometimes in the ordinance where we just didn't want to make it too verbose. So we just added a definition.
So is that okay to leave that, say, wireless cellular?
Sure.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Shivana, but the main issue I'm not trying to start an argument, but the main issue is you really do have an issue with RF, right? Just personally, I'm not saying for guys at this meeting, but the reason why this is different in the way the eyes of the government looks at it is when cellular and these guys go out and they want to put up a new tower, they're going to go get a license for their equipment. They're going to be able to transmit at some really high power. People who, if you limited it to where it said anything wireless, well, the little wireless router that's in your computer, I mean, you're looking at less than a watt. So there's really no power transmitted with it. You know, we can't use amplifiers like PCS and cell can. So. I think that's the reason why it was determined different in the TCA, which is why we asked that it was labeled that way in this ordinance as well.
Okay, Tess, thanks.
Because of the way the power is put out.
Yeah, and I thought that request was because it came from you and Steve actually at the very first meeting. So a lot of my input has nothing to do with what I even want. It's just trying to represent everybody.
Okay.
I'd love to be able to transmit it. 50 watts.
Okay. Other general stuff. We went over some things. I've got the notes that Shivana gave me, which were fairly detailed on changes she felt we made last time. I guess I won't go into a whole lot of detail there. It's 3:15. It's 5:00. We need to get through the rest of the ordinance. Process-wise, what we have coming up is a workshop with the Planning Commission, which we'd like to keep fairly general, help them focus on what it is that we're doing here, what the current process is, which is a conditional use permit and a site plan review by staff. Some of the major elements of this ordinance I'd like to cover with them would be to cover some of the major components of what wireless cellular PCS means to the community out there. I think we probably need to address with the Planning Commission something about any concerns that they have and how the Telecommunications Act treats transmissions. What about visibility of towers? What about the collection of towers? Differences in some of the major language co-location monopoles, those kind of things. Clarify what it is that we're actually addressing here. Talk about screening and talk about process. What goes to a ministerial permit that they won't see as Planning Commission members, and what will come as a quasi-judicial that they may see as Planning Commission members. But pretty much keep it limited to that. And what is exempt? We'll talk about that too.
Mm-hmm.
So what's included in the ordinance and what isn't? And that would be my direction to or my introduction to cover in an hour in a workshop with the Planning Commission. This committee, even though we continued the hearing to a date certain, and Anna reminded me, I think it was July
27.
I want the subcommittee to be happy with the work we've got before we really put the rubber to the road in a public hearing. And even if we have to continue the July 27th hearing, it's a little embarrassing.
25th.
Even if we have to go to them again and say, no, we're still not ready, we're still not got it nailed down, the brass tacks, that's okay.
because frankly, with something that's as complicated as this and as technical as this, and with the technical expertise that we have at the table, you don't want to hand something that has a lot of work yet to be done to a citizen body who's seeing it for the first time.
That's
going to
be a public hearing on July
25th? Yes. And if we're ready and the subcommittee has blessed it and we're happy with what's been done, then we'll go to that public hearing with a draft in hand. If we're not, we'll go for a request for continuance in hand. We're under no particular time frame or deadline to get this work done. I'd just like to get it done where we can. Get on to the next thing.
Do you know what
kind of
meeting is on July
25th? 7th.
Yeah, the same time as 7th.
Yeah.
So
it's not a special workshop for you.
No.
It's always the 7th.
The workshop coming up is at 6 o'clock.
So I just wanted to mention I will be out of state at the workshop date, the 20th. I didn't know anything about it.
Okay.
But it sounds like it's a general.
Monday night,
isn't it? Sounds like it's a general presentation.
20th is a planning meeting.
Okay, and it's a regular planning meeting?
Regular planning meeting with the workshop before it.
About this?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Then you don't have to have separate meetings.
Workshops for the information of the subcommittee here. Workshops for the planning commission are open to the public, but there's no public testimony. They're not run like a regular hearing. People don't get their 3 minutes of fame. It's they can attend, they can listen.
They can make notes.
The PC
comment.
Mm-hmm. Could ask if they have any comment, but that's entirely up to the sheriff running their meeting. I'm going to go to... Where did we leave it last time?
Where did we stop?
99050.
Yeah, we were just getting into development standards.
Actually, we were back. Oh, was it my hand?
Oh, handouts we gave you as well.
Phew.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on the handouts real quick. I'll explain what they are, and then we can fold them into our ordinance review and get to them as needed.
We thought that you had Q in that section.
Yeah.
And 050Q?
And so one of your handouts, the one that starts with 99.050, we went through the whole thing, and this is our input on that last, the second half.
Okay. I wanted to get to these two pieces.
Okay.
Before we dive in.
Do we have...
I need a copy of that.
Oh, that was sent out an email.
Yeah.
I just gave it to you in the package. I just gave it to you.
On the back.
Do you have a hard copy, Ron?
No. That's a deal. Cool.
I'll read up
there. Thank you.
I'll read up there.
I know.
We sent you two attachments to the email. The camp and the first one I'll cover is the cell tower setback matrix, other jurisdictions. James had done some of this work and I decided to add to it because setbacks were discussed in the last meeting and we were talking about what acreage that would be. And somewhere in my notes I had compared to other jurisdictions. James had done some local jurisdictions and I think he did Jackson, Grants Pass, Wayne. Typically, with almost every ordinance that we're going to do in this county, we look at like 10 other jurisdictions or so. We did it on fees. We're doing it here. And I just took a smattering of our neighbors in Jackson, Grants Pass, Marion County, Klamath County, some others. Tried to weed my way through Douglas County's ordinance, and frankly, I got a headache. So... interestingly enough, Lincoln has no setback, and they do it per application.
How big are they?
Lincoln? Well, they're along the coast. Do you mean population-wise or area-wise?
Both. Well, there's a lot of people there. Or?
I think population-wise, they're about the same as this county. Area-wise, they're quite a bit smaller. But they're along,
people
they're
are
along the coast.
There.
So,
they're out surfing.
Should be.
Washington County, obviously a lot bigger than we are. They had an interesting anomaly that I didn't see in other codes, which was 0.3 of the tower height in public and commercial industrial zones, which I thought was an odd setback.
What was the TH thing?
Tower height, so at the bottom of the memo. And base zone is the setback of the base zone of the subject property. So if commercial, same as for structures. If the commercial zone is a 25-foot setback to the front property line and 5 to the rear, that's where it is for a cell tower. Okay? Let's just give you some idea of what other jurisdictions are doing. The two most popular seem to be tower height and base zone.
Other Oregon jurisdictions.
Other Oregon jurisdictions, right. Anyway, the other handout was this one. James, do you want to discuss that, or you know more about GIS? You might be able to answer better questions.
That's the GIS map, Paul, that shows all the sites.
Yeah, I have that map in front of me here.
Okay. Let me know what he's referencing.
I called up GIS and asked them to do an exercise for us, and that was to place a 1,500-foot buffer around every residence in the county. The data he has reflects residences as of 2005. So he went and did that, and basically what's left behind is the potential areas for cell towers. And as I look at this, as you can see, that the red dots are the existing cell towers, and most of them fall within this boundary.
We only have one in town?
Areas outside of this are basically federal lands. If you go look at the other maps that reflect that. But just to give you an idea what a 1,500-foot setback would do to the industry, that's what they would be dealing with, is trying to find a site.
Kind of siting restrictions we would have.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Where they would fall around there. You can tell it's, I feel it kind of leans more towards a pretty restrictive type of setback scenario.
One thing we haven't been able to compare.
Mm-hmm. So what is the blue here?
One thing we haven't been able to compare to this map is propagation areas outside of these particular cell towers and, you know, what corridors or whatever that the industry would feel that they need to provide coverage. Within the areas that are not covered by a blue dot.
And we also even came with a proposed rewrite of that section that would deal with the issue of if they need to put something somewhere to fill a gap in service and they can't meet the 1,500.
Right.
We came with the rewrite for that.
One of the nice things I think that we can do, and we were, James and I were thinking this was sort of a pie in the sky GIS exercise we weren't actually going to get done, but Cody Zook, our GIS analyst, was able to pull this together on residences through 2005, and James and I were, in fact, pretty floored that he could do that. He's melding an aerial photograph, essentially, and county property tax data with our GIS system and able to kick this out. So the committee, if the subcommittee wants, I don't want to go through the exercise too many times, but now that he's merged those two documents, we can throw a setback at him and say, okay, Cody, can we see a map for 250? Can we see a map for whatever? We can pick different distances and see what the impact would be and how it changes. And that's, I think, a pretty powerful tool for figuring out what
that'll be good to see a visual, because that'll make much more sense. Okay. Vivian, you had a question for Jane?
I'm looking at the little red dots, and these are the only county cell towers. Is that correct?
The red dots show existing cell towers.
Okay. Because across the street from my house on Smoky Lane, which is, I don't know if this is it, there's two cell towers. They have a lot of those little dishes all over them. And so I get really good reception up there. And so, is that the only one in the county area? Is that the one?
This was
the top of the ball?
One was this updated, and we submitted Cody the data
this is
a couple of
this is CJ, though.
2 months ago.
Mm-hmm. CJ.
Mm-hmm. Cape Junction area.
Okay, mm-hmm. Then where are we? Where's the Grants Pass
here?
Grants Pass. Oh, well, I'm in the wrong.
Yeah,
I'm in the wrong neighborhood.
Wrong spot on the map.
So one of these Grants spots are probably on the top of Mount Baldy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. I was looking down here.
Yeah, that's Cape Junction, so.
Okay.
That's south of Grants Pass.
Yeah, if we were to put the stuff back in at 1,500 feet, only three of these towers would actually be legal.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We do have, if people want to see it in the other room, we have our map. It does have the whole county at a larger scale. It shows where the towers are. We will probably provide that map and this one to the Planning Commission of workshop, so they can get a geographic basis for where we're at.
We can't get it before then.
I'm going to have a print in the other room. You can look at it after.
So Shavana had asked the blue area.
I got it.
Okay.
Blue area is restricted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That would be the buffer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the acreage is cut out to 162.
So that's why I said we rewrote that section, given the impact that people. We have a proposed rewrite of that section, given the input. People. There were two main inputs. One is, hey, what if there's a service gap, and this is too restrictive? So what do you do then? And then the other main input was, if an individual homeowner says it's fine with me if they put the tower here, the way it was written before, they were limited to only being able to waive 250 feet. But now the way we wrote it, they can waive whatever distance they want.
Which they should, yeah.
If a resident said that. But also, we've added in another contingency of the 1,500 gets reduced if nothing can meet it. It gets reduced to whatever it needs to be reduced to in order to fill that service gap.
Now, Shavana, what if you put into the thing where you left the 1,500-foot setback in, but yet anyone within that 1,500 feet, if they signed off on it, then that would make it okay?
Regardless of any other.
Let's say that you have a piece of land, and a cell company comes up to you and says, "Hey, we'd like to use it, but we have this 1,500 setback." If you and everyone within that 1,500 feet says, "Hey, we don't mind it, we want it here," regardless of whether or not it shows a gap in coverage area or it shows whatever else may be there, as long as you can see that the people that are in that 1,500 foot area that they're in agreement to it, then the tower should go there.
Well, one of the requirements to even have a tower is that they have to demonstrate a gap in service. So that's
I'm not sure that we've actually. The definition of service, I think, is still up in the air, though, isn't it?
Right.
What's determined to be a gap in service?
Right.
Is it a gap in telephone service, or is it a gap in actual whatever services they provide, period?
I think from what I was educated by, I think the two of you, you can't just say it's telephone service, because that's going to get knocked out first if more capacity is being used for, let's say, videos.
Exactly.
So that's not an issue.
The problem is if you...
So that's capacity. That's a lack of energy coverage, but you're still missing capacity.
If you see those...
And gap in service includes capacity. Yeah.
So you see those commercials for 3G and 4G, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We're now 4G.
Do you know what 4G means?
Fourth generation.
Doesn't mean that they're changing frequencies. It doesn't mean that they're changing the way that they're doing business. It's a new updated equipment that can handle more customers, that can handle more functionality, so to speak. And a lot of times when we're currently installing our 3G equipment right now, and our first generation equipment is going to be removed totally once that's done. And if you can't get coverage with our 3G, and you could get coverage with our first generation equipment, well, we lost you as a customer. Because we can't afford to operate all this different equipment all at the same time. It's too much for us.
So I think this does the way that the competitor, I think it satisfies what you were looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does satisfy.
And that you've got that, I don't know if we're there yet, but that's what you've got in the little one sheet setbacks proposal.
Okay.
So are we actually addressing this issue now, or just really looking at the handouts that you...
I would still like to go over this.
Go ahead.
Well, you got two head guys, so. Do we have any way of knowing from either Lane County or from any of these people to any of these other counties to find out, well, hey, this is working great for us, or hey, we've had issues with this setback to where we could actually make a more of an informed decision on, okay, well...
Yeah, I don't have any qualitative data from them at all. All I've got is what's in their code, and just look at it from that lens only.
I would say it was acceptable at the time as far as how it's going. I don't know what you'd even base that on, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess what I want to just mention with the setbacks, maybe to also bring Vivian up to date a little bit, setbacks is probably the number one concern of the CAC. So that's, I think, in all of us, and that's why we spent more time on setbacks. We spent three meetings on setbacks than any other meeting, and we made a lot of, did a lot of negotiating and made a lot of compromises to come up with what we agreed upon. And last time, you know, some really important things were pointed out that it was missing.
I missed the last meeting.
Okay. Well, like the sign-off, you know, the sign-off seems to be limited to you can only sign off 250 feet, and that was that's changed in this. And I just want to point out that this represents Oregon, and I've been tracking more the trend nationally and the trend in the most recent ordinances, and I could give you a number of ordinances that have 1,500 feet, for example.
I would like to say something on that, though. The reason why I'm glad that they did this is because this is actually a better representation of our terrain. I looked at a lot of the different places from back east and down south, and it's a lot different when you have flat ground. You don't have things in the way. When you bring a cell tower in, you get better distances, you get better coverages, and you can kind of pick and choose more of where you put your tower. When you're in a situation like where we're at, it's you kind of have to bend with Mother Nature a little bit because of what our terrain is. And what I've seen, which I don't have anything to show you, I had a problem this morning with some power issues, but when down in Florida, for example, they have some different setbacks. I think they do have one county has a 2,000-foot setback. But you have 50 miles line of sight. There's nothing in the way. So you really don't have to worry about terrain because the biggest hill there is 6 feet tall. So
the question would be residences.
Yeah.
You know, if there's right at the hill to the resident, you preclude them from putting in logical spots. I realize coverage is more, but there's two issues, you know.
The other thing, though, is that now that they have access to the 700 megahertz wavelength, the difference between megahertz is the lower the megahertz, correct me, please, the further it travels and the more it penetrates and goes through things. So now that they have the 700, which is a low, they used to be using higher ones. Now that they have 700 megahertz open to them, it facilitates, again, coverage in more difficult terrain. Just throw that on me, too.
Still,
wireless companies, they do have the 700 megahertz spectrum. They still operate with the other spectrums as well, 1900 and 850. Mm-hmm. So some wireless facilities will operate and they'll use all the frequencies, for example, from one site, because each frequency is used for a different technology, different purposes. The 700 is for the LTE, they call it, which is the 4G. That's meant mostly for data. It doesn't carry voice, for example. So they still need the other frequencies, and they need to be able to operate to carry voice and the other features of those frequencies.
So you think 700 megahertz is not going to be used for voice at all?
No, it's for data. It's for like your smartphones, and you can surf the internet and do all sorts of amazing things with your smartphones, internet. All that data-heavy sort of stuff.
So you're saying if somebody has to, so you have to supply several different wavelengths in order for somebody to both be able to make phone calls by voice and be able to surf the internet?
Yeah. So the phones are configured to receive multiple signals from these different frequencies to support the different.
So are you saying at each site you're going to have to put up all the different frequencies?
Yeah, it's very common that there's like 850, 1900 megahertz, and then 700. Mm-hmm. That's the product that I'm personally involved with these days is the LTE. That's the 700 upgrade, where they need to replace the antennas to do it, the technological upgrade, but they still keep some of the existing antennas to broadcast at the other wavelengths as well.
So is it accurate that if you get other frequency band waves, let's say even higher than 1900, that the higher you go, the more towers and the more antennas you're going to ask for, you would need to ask for, because they don't travel as far or go through things as well.
You know, I'm not an engineer. I'm not sure about the physics of the wavelengths and all that sort of stuff, how far they travel, what they can go through.
I know that
with the 700 megahertz, that it's not requiring additional towers. What we're doing is replacing antennas on existing towers or existing rooftops, wherever the wireless facility happens to be. They're not putting up more towers and antennas to support the new antennas.
There was no change as far as the public would be aware of. You couldn't tell what frequency it is. I mean, like you said, they don't really add antennas.
If it works from an existing tower, but if you're saying that more technology, different technology, the more technology advances, the more different, 1900 works for this and 700 works for that and 850 works for that, the more antennas going at all different wavelengths at the same time is going to be needed. And if technology comes about more in the 1900 range or even in a higher megahertz range, then all of a sudden locations that are serving fine won't go as far or won't go around hills as much, and so therefore more sites are going to... I mean, it sounds like it's endless.
But that's an existing issue right now.
And so
wireless carriers, they are still building new towers and stuff. I'm not saying that, but the work I'm doing is installing placement antennas, or they might add antennas to an existing tower, but that they do have the need to install new wireless facilities as well. As population increases in an area, their subscriber numbers increase in an area, they need to provide additional services to serve those customers in an area.
Right, which is not necessarily endless. I mean, they'll only build as required. Populous growth around here could dictate that. Well, we're only going to expand urban growth boundaries around the county to a certain degree in a certain amount of time, so it's not like huge proliferation.
But as technology, what he's saying is that as technology increases, it's not like, if I'm hearing it correctly, it's not like now that they have the 700 band, the 700 can service all the technologies that exist. It sounds like as technology increases, the number of wavelengths that they have to transmit on to accommodate this one does that and this one does that.
True,
and this one
but
does that.
It's kind of irrelevant.
Well, yeah, sure it is if you're putting up more and more antennas.
Well, the cool thing about it is the lower frequency you go, the less power you need.
The lower frequency, yeah.
So by going down, most cell sites, if they're going to use anything in 6 gig or 10 gig or 11 gig, they're going to use that for backhaul. They're going to use that to send the signal from one tower to another, and that's how they get their signal to the tower. Anything above, I don't think they're using anything above 2.
There's no such thing. It'll become actually impractical to go much higher because it won't work at all.
Higher than 1900?
Much higher than 1900.
Is what I,
it right. will become impractical because it just will not do the job. That's why the 700 came to be. Because it serves the purpose that they need. If they go the other direction, higher frequency, it won't serve the purpose.
But the 700 isn't replacing?
It's replacing
the function, or can't replace the function
of
the 900?
It's in addition to. It's doing a load balance, basically, is what it's doing. Everyone wants these phones. They want them to do all these neat, wonderful things. Well, they had to figure out a way to do that without putting up 6,000 more towers. So if you want everything to run off of that one frequency, okay, so we're going to have to lower the power for our existing system because we have to put another tower over here. So instead of having 6 antennas that cover this whole area, we're going to have 6 antennas here, we're going to have 6 antennas here, and then we're going to be broadcasting from both of those places because we need to balance our load. We need to actually add capacity to our system. Mm-hmm. So by going with 700 megahertz, we put that on one tower. Now we eliminate the need for that tower. Now you're looking at more antennas. We're bringing more frequencies in for this one tower. It's actually beneficial because we don't need that tower that's 2 miles away.
Okay, and to absorb, I remember where we started.
Sorry.
I don't remember why we were going up.
Make a lot more sense. Technology changes, they're not going to spend $1 million to put a tower up if they can get away with using the one that they're using.
Well, that's, we're all in agreement about that. That's co-location.
I think we were trying to demonstrate to get a gap in coverage to locate a facility within that setback or so. Talking about the frequencies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, but what we're at right now is we're trying to get back to the setbacks on the 1,500 feet, and from the propagation map that GIS did, 1,500 feet pretty much wipes out the county from putting any towers in. So that's where the questions and the issue were, because when you're thinking 1,500 feet linear, it's a whole lot of difference than 1,500 feet from house.
I see.
Because it expands that coverage and it puts each tower, 152 miles or 157 mile radius? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a dramatic number and a dramatic restriction.
So if what we're doing now is fully going into the discussion about the setbacks, then I'd like to bring this handout that you have in your packet to your attention. It's just a one-page thing. It's written, came out in really interesting font.
Like a funny font?
Yes, it came out in funny font. Not the font I had it in, but it's really cool. A little bit casual for the purpose, but...
Saturday morning curtain?
So this is what we came up with as an edit to what was to deal with two of the issues that were brought up last time.
Yeah.
Do you not have a copy? I can give you a copy.
Please, I'm not saying it this back here. Cool.
So it's just a rewrite of Section G that opens it up to, if they can't fill the gap in service, well, then this might be controversial because you said, right, how you have to define it. How did you find a gap in service? So the definition that I use is the definition that FCC has. My understanding of the definition of what FCC has for a carrier to have it, to keep their license, the licensing criteria. So it's basically saying if given the 1,500 setback, there's no place where to put it, then they can reduce the setback, the minimum amount needed to let them fill that gap in coverage. And then the other one was the one that Steve's wife brought up at the last minute, which was that an owner of a residential dwelling within the 1,500 feet of a proposed site may waive any amount of the setback from their dwelling if done so in writing and notarized.
Okay. Notarized.
Just so the note them. Just so they don't, like, you don't have somebody who says, I'm the owner and I never waived that. I never signed that.
If you have a writing from them.
But you don't know it's them who signed it.
Oh.
I don't think that they're going
to. Well, for something as critical as this, if something as minor as getting it notarized, I don't see if they have a problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so it says on A, from their dwelling. And we started to talk about other people within the dinner.
Well, anybody.
Well.
That includes everybody. Anybody who wants to waive it from their own dwelling. They can't waive it from other people's dwellings. They
but
can waive it from their own
dwelling.
But
other people in their dwellings could have the right to waive it as well, because the 1,500 would otherwise have influenced.
This isn't just the property owner. This is any owner of a residential dwelling within 1,500 feet of a proposed site. So all of the ones who are... Like,
they all
have
to waive it.
If they're within 1,500, yeah.
And then
or they can waive any amount of it.
If somebody doesn't live on the internet...
If you have, you know...
evil can hold up the whole neighborhood.
Well, yeah, because you're still talking... That's the 1,500 feet. You're still talking 150 mile radius. You got some guy that's 10 miles away. He can screw you. I don't want it.
No, if he's 10 miles away, he's not. He's more than 1,500 feet away.
Not from the propagation map, from the area to the coverage.
She was talking to Lonnie, I think.
We're just talking about from the site of the antennas of the...
So based on the propagation map, a wireless provider comes in and says, this is my preferred site.
Yeah.
I've got... two landowners here that are going to be within 1,500 feet, and I've got two more landowners that are beyond 1,500 feet with their dwellings, not the property.
Yeah, line. Yeah. Right.
I'm going to go to those two people. I'm going to get their notarized statement that it's okay, and I can locate there.
Right.
And that's how
can you
work on the ground.
Right.
You define this.
That is
technical language. Yeah.
With this full the setback and reduce the minimum. What is the minimum amount?
The smallest amount possible to allow them to cover that area.
We probably need to describe that then. Mm-hmm. The minimum amount.
Okay.
What's the minimum amount?
The minimum amount to allow.
I was in the middle of saying something.
Okay.
So I'm finished.
if we pass a portion of our code that says, here's our setback unless your neighbor says different, I got to tell you, that's a pretty unusual planning standard. And that's, I get nervous about that one as a planning director, because we've got, generally what we try to do in any land use regulation is make things consistent enough so it's going to apply the same to Shivana's, it's going to apply to Daz, it's going to apply to James. And to have a portion of your county that's going to be treated differently depending upon the whims of those particular property owners is going to be a hard thing to, A, I think make consistent with our comprehensive plan, and B, I'm not sure the county commissioners are going to really go for that, or the planning commission. I see what we're trying to get to, which is some people object, some people don't object. Let's let those who do object be able to assert their objection in a code, and let those who do not object assert their objection. Part of what we write codes for, though, is future county residents and not residents yet. And that's a difficult standard for some people to think about, because, well, what do I care about somebody who doesn't live here yet? Well, I care, because that's why I'm a land use planner. So I would urge you, though I can't control you all, I'd urge you to come up with a standard that you think can be that balance between those who object and those that don't, perhaps with a real limited exemption for a property owner. And the example that Mrs. Porter brought up last time, if someone was on their own 150-acre track and they didn't mind the cell tower within 50 feet of their own house on their own property, that kind of exemption from the ordinance setbacks, I think we could certainly live with that. But they have a general, you know, a group of people can object and a group of people cannot object, and what if you've got 9 out of 10 in an area and you still have one guy that says, wait a minute, I want my 1,500 feet. Does the one owner control? I prefer to see setbacks relative to lot size, which is usually relative to zones. That's a more traditional way to look at the density of towers in an area. So if you've got large tracts where residential uses are more dispersed, you can have a larger setback and you're fine. But if you're in a 1 or 2 acre or 5 acre tract area, then you start looking at a smaller setback. That's a suggestion the subcommittee can put that around however you like. But
this map. The cities, it doesn't, this is covering Grants Pass and Cave Junction. That's not county. All of those cities have nothing to do with that regulation. This map, it doesn't exclude the cities.
That whole map is the county.
No, but we have no regulation over all of Grants Pass City and all of Cave Junction City.
That's correct.
So the 1,500 setback doesn't count. It doesn't apply. So those
Well,
should,
actually it would, though, because, no. I know what you're saying, like deep within Grants Pass.
Well, city regulations, the city's completely different. If somebody lives in the city, then
right.
The county.
Right, but a resident can be in the city. For the purposes of seeing what the impact's going to be to county lands, those residences that are on the edge of the city UGB or the city limits would be counted for our 1,500 feet, would they not?
That's a really good question that I have to think about, but it seems like the major part of the densely area here should not be blued out, because it's subject to city regulations.
Well, we're
not
regulating it, though. This is just
can't we just forget that? It's only going to be this big. Why even talk about that?
I think it's going to change the way the map looks to us if you take out the two cities.
This little spot right in here, and this little spot right in here.
I'd like to see how big it is, because when I look at that, I'd say, oh my God, yeah, that's a lot of density of people that are going to have trouble or have to go for the exception.
So you want one that only shows county?
Yeah, I would like to see one that not the dots, it's the blue part, the blue part that
Because we have no
and
the border is another question. That's a very good question.
Yeah,
and
well,
I have to think about it.
James,
do you see what I mean?
GIS,
like it's misrepresentation visually.
Can Cody, he could take out Grants Pass?
Yeah, I don't know if he can take it out, but he could definitely put a border around him. Then in your mind you can kind of...
And Cave Junction, because those areas are not...
I mean, just
applicable.
We only have two incorporated cities in this county.
Cave Junction.
I think we pretty much know where they're at. And I know when I look at that, I can tell what Grants Pass and where Cave Junction is and where my ordinance is going to apply and where it isn't. But the residences, unless we can... Then you're saying only county residences would be subject to the 1,500-foot setback? Because
that's
it's
all,
the setback to the
town. Yeah, because that's
and
all, but that's all we have really any jurisdiction over. Yeah, only county residences.
The city, does it...
It
changes things a lot.
As I recall, it's the height of the towers.
Yes. But they have their own regulation for their own. And yes, if where a house is right on the edge of the county and the city border.
The city's the height of the tower. But I thought that we put in there the height of the tower plus 50 feet.
From property lines, not from residences.
That's a different kind of setback.
Oh, yeah.
Different
okay.
setback, yeah. Yeah, I think what I'm realizing is I think this map would look. I mean, it is a little shocking when you see the density of residents in there, but I think it would change.
Dots in there that were in city limits. It would look like we had a free-range cell tower.
In the densest areas, they would be. It would be white, let's say, or it would be. It would not be blue, in the densest areas. So it's just.
Well,
that was a lot better.
Yes and no.
PowerPoint presentation.
I think the problem with it is that it creates the impression that you have an area necessarily available to you that we don't have any jurisdiction.
No, that's where you draw the red line around, say, the city.
Well, that's true, though.
That's only applicable to city rules.
If you're going to have Corey do that, then he should probably do it with the current proposed expansion of the UGB, too. And by the time this gets done, that should be about that.
If he has access to that data, he might be able to pull it off.
Yeah. Or if not, you can get it from Tom. Tom's got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
we've already asked a lot of favors, so I'm being careful, okay?
This
is not a regulatory document. This is just a
graphic image.
It's a graphic image.
But it's not an accurate graph. It gives a very different impression if the cities are
James,
white.
I just want to say one more thing. Is that those blue areas are where the houses are. That's where the towers are going to be going. Because Taz is not going to put a tower out in the middle of nowhere and be alone because there's no customers to serve. I just want to make that clear, too. The towers will be located in these blue areas. This is where they're going.
No, they need to serve those blue areas. That's all we know.
And that's where they need to go, is in these areas.
And 99% of it is outside the city. And I don't see why the city is such a big deal. I'll go back to that.
Because the scale on this is, Grants Pass is really small.
Yeah,
and
my point.
So
it's irrelevant. It's so small.
Your scale is very small on here. It's not this large. It's very small. Williams is very small. Cape Junction is very small.
Yeah.
The majority, like Steve said, 90% of this is county.
99.
That's the scale that you're looking at.
Well, a scale is not a relative thing. It's two scale. Deal with it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
The city is this big.
It's a little tiny dot.
Not to my eye. 46 years, I know where the city is.
For the hearing, we'll
provide a less blue map.
If we decide what we're... Any members of this map that we want to ask Cody to do what he's capable of doing, whether it be UGB or current city boundary, depending upon the database we have. Ron, would you like to see a full-scale map for the Planning Commission here or the workshop?
It would be good to have one because we're going to have a public workshop anyway. We need to have one for that. So.
Okay.
Then Cody could be...
Well, we can kick one out for the Planning Commission workshop. And bring that map then to the next subcommittee meeting so you can see what it looks like in a large scale.
Yeah, you can do that overlay
and
talk to
we'll decide if we need to make any amendments before we go to hearing.
The other thing you're saying, I mean, I agree the standard thing is always the best, but your variance has already come into play. Variances are basically, and this is an exception, and that can be an exception. So it's not that foreign. It can be a pain, but it's not that foreign to the planning department to have certain situations where variances will be issued.
And at this point, none of it's subject to a variance, and that's what we're at you on.
Well, the way that's written, there are two cases in which it's subject to a variance.
The way your proposal's written.
Right, right.
I'm not sure what, and please don't take offense. I'm not sure. I thought that we went through this before when we talked about the safety concerns about, you know, structure failure, and we went the height of the tower plus 50 feet. And the what is the reason for the 1,500-foot setback is, because if it's RF, then that's a false sense of security because if you have the umbrella effect from a tower, 1,500 feet it wouldn't make any sense because of the umbrella effect. So you're
asking why is it 1,500 at this point?
And we spent three meetings on that and negotiating it and giving up other things to get that. And
well, I kind of hope that we can come to that decision in the subcommittee. If not, the planning decision or the planning commission will end up making that decision. But no matter what happens, it has to be a justifiable decision.
Or it could be appealed, and we've got, and it'll go nowhere.
No,
right?
But it's already been appealed in New York to Minster and to Luba.
But we don't care about New York.
Yeah,
it has to be an Oregon issue.
And it's been upheld.
Well, and that's fine, and just not. I don't want to get into a big debate about it. It's just that, but we're Oregon. We hear about what happens here. The problem is when you have people who are not in the industry, and when you stand under an umbrella when it's raining, do you get wet?
Why don't you make the point?
I'm asking a question. If you stand underneath an umbrella when it's raining, do you get wet?
Okay.
Well, if you're standing within the you look at the down tilt of your antenna, and you look at the way that antenna is designed, the way it sends out the signal. If you're within that fall rate, you're not going to get hit with any radiation. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, we spent three meetings on this, and we negotiated, and we did some compromises with you, particularly.
And we found out that it won't work.
So
there's nowhere to put them, so don't even go there anymore. It's all out the window. All the work won't work.
So what's being suggested? What change to the 1,500
is
being suggested?
Well, that's a good point. What is being suggested?
Well,
we could all, I suppose, put some input in.
What we had at the last meeting is what brought to this meeting is, I'm going to go over what's been written. Again, I apologize. I missed the last meeting.
Here's some suggestions right here.
Okay, so for Vivian and Paul, well, Paul is here.
Here's one of those.
Yes.
There's my suggestion.
Everybody thought 1,500 feet was 1,500
on the table. Maybe we'll look at 1,200.
Everybody thought 1,500 feet was 1,500 feet from the tower, which is not a true statement. It's 1,500 feet from a house, which expands the boundaries almost exponential, and it restricts the coverage. Seeing it in the visual format we have in the map format today that was emailed to everybody is a whole different picture than just thinking, oh, I'm only 1,500 feet from the tower. It's a huge difference.
Right.
And that has to be reweighed.
Jackson County is going with 200.
Lane County.
Perhaps that's worthy of consideration. It's our neighbor. They have the same mountainous kind of area. And they have a very large public populated base with educated people in it.
This is Paul here. I think that a pretty straightforward setback like that would be much easier for the county to administer as well. The way that the setback is written here, aside from it doesn't work because it's ours in a great area of the county, but it's very difficult to administer it. I'm not sure how the county planning staff would be able to put together all of the ingredients here to figure out if a tower could actually go within the 1,500 foot setback here, and there's no exceptions for these other uses here. There's an exception for residences if you can get somebody to sign off, but how about schools, daycares, hospitals, these rehab centers? And I don't understand what the I have such a large setback from these uses. Typically, wireless facility setbacks are meant to address visual impact concerns and safety concerns, structural safety concerns for the tower, which is why you see a lot of the 100% height setbacks for towers, for example. And those are individual impact setbacks are very justifiable for residences because those are generally want to protect visual views from the homes for the most part, but from daycares and schools and hospitals, I don't understand the large setback and what it looks like to me and what the county needs to be aware of and keep this on the radar is that if it is if this setback is motivated by a fear of radio frequency emissions, that would be, and if the county were to adopt a setback that's based off of radio frequency emissions and wanting to limit radio frequency emissions, that would be a violation of the Rural Telecom Act. But whatever the setback is, I would recommend that it's a pretty straightforward setback, and it cannot be based off of radio frequency emissions.
And we knew that going into this. All of us did.
But, you know, it's just a reminder that in that case, I still don't understand why a 1,500-foot setback from a host of these other uses. I still think it's difficult for the county to administer something like this. I think a straightforward setback like is seen in the Matrix from the other counties. More straightforward, easily understood by anybody reading the code, because you're going to get a lot of folks in the public who want to understand this stuff as well.
One of the responses to that too that I thought of was that I am at the bottom of my second note on page 4-5.
No, we don't have numbered pages. And page 5 of the watch of.
That doesn't save either. I've numbered the pages.
Page 5 of what?
Okay. You did. You numbered them. You did.
The draft ordinance?
Yeah, I don't know. Page 5 where?
Okay, I printed it out with his note to us at the top, so everything on mine went to a different page.
Page 5 where?
Bottom column, there's a note, and then a second note, and a third note. Under subsection 2, setback limitation.
Mm-hmm. They're highlighted in yellow.
Yep. Placing a standard on a proposed residence, as we have in this language, is tricky. What if an application for a home comes in when a wireless application is pending, or a site is proposed but never built? And another situation I just thought of it when Paul was making his comments, what if you get your tower in and then a residence comes in within 1,500 feet? It's the residence that's now violating the setback, so to speak, rather than the tower itself. So, does the tower become non-conforming per the code? Because it would.
No. Not the tower predates the residence.
I can tell you where this came up at a meeting that you were in, and I don't care. You know, take out the public buildings. You know, this thing says public buildings, not a problem.
You
know, I don't know what to do about
that.
Well, we can refine
public facilities if you think that there's
a Or just take out those words. But I just want to tell you where this thing came from. It came from an actual situation where people had gotten a driveway. They put in all the infrastructure. They put in the driveway, spend tens of thousands of dollars on a driveway, gotten all those permits, you know, so that their house site was determined.
Right.
And then 30 feet away, a tower right in front of their view was going to go up. So that's just what brought up, okay, so if they can show by applications to the county that predate the application of the tower that they, you know, it'll clearly show that their house was going to be, that's how that came up. You know, maybe that's a rare situation, so it doesn't really matter. And they fall through the cracks. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I would recommend that setback be measured to zoning boundary lines, like from residential zoning districts, because it's, again, getting back to how do we administer this code, if we're going to measure it to residential dwellings, it's difficult to pinpoint where are all these dwellings, especially when it's forested area. How do we find out where are all these dwellings? How exactly, how far are they? How are we going to measure that? And it's quite an exercise to put all that together. But if you measure it to a zoning boundary, then your house can be, if it's on a large lot, you already have you could have a large buffer is to your property line, and then you can have whatever the extra setback is on, you know, 100% height setback or 200 feet, whatever it might be.
Well, Paul, our residential zones are essentially everything up to 5 acres.
It's everything out there, so it could be
5 acres, 2.5, and a 1 acre zone.
Yeah. Just a suggestion. I'm not sure how that would work out on the ground because I don't have the zoning map in front of me. But
in thinking about some of the example that Giovanna had raised, where we've got a possible visual impact to a residential property owner, I think there's some other ways to get there, not just setbacks. We do have some visual simulation language that we had in here, and we might be able to look at potential properties and where would a tower be viewed from, something like that.
It doesn't address, and that's another issue that I wanted to bring up again, property values is absolutely recognized by all the courts as a legitimate issue.
No, it's not. Excuse me. No, it's not. I'm going through that out right now.
That's not what I'm coming. Well, then we'll both have to look at what cases.
I was just told by ODOT right now what they're doing in front of my business is completely illegal, and if I lose property values, it's oh well.
Hard to prove that that's what's causing the
business. So it's too hard to prove what's causing property value decreases. This
so
is
we'll
the
quote from ODOT. We'll have to look at that because I in one of the handouts I've listed court cases and what they've decided.
How many courts put ODOT out of business?
Oh, I would love that.
But I was, you know, what if we look at Lane County? What if we go for the 1,200 that Lane County is doing or find out how Lane County is doing with their 1,200?
Not much different than 15.
Well, how about 200?
Really, the question that I have is it just a straight 1,200 linear, or is it 1,200 from resident, is it 1,200 from zone?
We should have the same from Jackson. Well, that's from the dwelling, right?
From zone,
do
so
we know? Do we know?
So
on the matrix.
So on the matrix?
Yeah.
Wait, oh, that's setback to property line. Setbacks are always measured that way. I mean, with the present exception, they're always measured to property line.
Now, you represent which committee?
I come from the CAC in Williams, but I'm not just representing Williams. CAC is actually a sort of a part of the planning department.
Oh, no, it's been simple for me, huh?
Citizens Advisory Committee. Yeah.
Okay, and how many people are on that?
On the committee?
Seven.
Elected. We operate as a town council, even though we're not a council. We're not a town.
Okay. Do they have a problem with 200?
Yeah.
How big of a problem?
86% of the community, when we had a town vote, would have a problem with that.
And how many people are in Williams?
As many as one. We're representing, I mean, we're a microcosm for other communities also. I think there were 3,000. But that's 80. Aren't there that's what I heard.
The whole valley's about 5.
Well, 5,000? So we get what we got to get back to is where is this number coming from? Are we coming from RF emissions? Are we coming from a safety issue? Are we coming from a tower failure? Are we coming from where?
Yeah.
But that's the question that needs to be answered, and then we have to address it from that point forward. If it's coming from RF, then throw it out the window because it's done. It doesn't matter.
So
we still have to have a legal basis with what we come up with. We can't just pick a number because somebody said it.
They're comfortable with it. Mm-hmm.
So we can do visual, we can do property value. Well, we have to establish, between Taz and I have different opinions about what the best.
Well, you have from the Grants Pass Board of Realty, they submitted a letter to us last meeting or the meeting before that that said they can't tell you anything over property values changing or adjusting.
Well, okay.
Well, so
let's look at the property value section.
I can tell you what was told to me on my property in Cape Junction, that I increased the property my value with the tower on there, and that was from a realtor in Cape Junction. So
ODOT's trying to give squat about it.
Yeah, well, no, ODOT's trying to put a light in, and they're trying to put a median through the panel
lighting downtown.
But what that has to do is
one
that,
whole light?
That has to do with where you can turn in and out of businesses throughout the town. But according to what I was told from when I bought my property, is that the my property values increased because the tower was there.
And why would that be? I know probably the answer, but why would that be?
They didn't give me an explanation for it. Just said, give me more money.
Well,
if you're generating revenue.
Okay.
Exactly. In that case,
that's what the county and all the state and everybody does.
I am
more values and you pay more.
This one.
And
so it goes back to my original issue. Is that 15 coming from our effort? Is that 15 coming from something factual that we can base the judgment on? That's the question that I see needs to be answered.
Who is from Williams TAC?
You, I am, and Steve is.
And Steve, do you remember any better what that came from?
Which?
Whether it came from what he just said. So yours or mine?
Where your 1500
coming from. How that was derived based on what?
Mostly people didn't just doesn't want one in their face.
Even if it looked
like
a tree?
If you had a 200-foot state setback, you got it in your face.
Okay. Okay. If they make it look and like
people
a tree.
People just, you know, they realize they got to have it, but they don't want to look at it, you know.
That's a NIMBY.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when you got 86% in the community, I don't know if that's NIMBY or not.
Well, I look at two cell towers on top of Mount Baldy. It doesn't bother me at all.
I'll give you
and
a point.
And that's the thing, that there are some people who doesn't, but there's a large part.
No, I get
really good reception.
I'll give you a prime example in our community. There's
a can't judge about RF, so RF, if it's coming on basis of RF, then we have to not be
talking about that. Okay, I'm sorry, sir, but you say you look at them off Mount Baldy?
Yeah.
If you're more than 1,500 feet away from Mount Baldy, you wouldn't have a say anyway. So, in what I'm saying is, you're.
If they were in my yard, it wouldn't bother me. Okay.
This is the point. I'm all for safety. I'm for safety for me, for one, because I climb the dang things. Mm-hmm. So, I love. The
I'd really rather they look like trees, though.
Yeah, I would rather they don't.
Do you want to look like trees?
Let Steve finish because he was asked a question. So.
I'm sorry.
A prime example is U.S. Cellular has a tower up on this. Up on this ridge between Williams and Crowville to serve both, well, actually, primarily to serve Williams. And the guy that owned the property, he subdivided up there. And he subdivided, gosh, 3-4 years ago, right about the time the tower went in. And he hasn't been able to sell a lot, not one. And these are beautiful view lots, right?
That is not amazing.
Bad reception.
Yeah, well, no one's going to buy that. That's the sole reason.
So there's a section on property value that
you
prepare.
You buy that real quickly.
Right. But I have not seen anything from Grants Pass Association or
just Williams, just county, or just nation. Hello.
Any change in the value?
We got letters already in Williams from when there was going to be a tower that was 30 feet in front of this proposed site and about 100 feet in front of the house behind it. We have realtor letters already. I can fax them to you. I can bring them in. I also have documentation here on...
Bring it in and document it to the planning commission or bring it to the workshop.
Okay. And here...
There's got to be better ways to regulate other than property values. That's my... I mean, property values are very subjective, and you can get into a quagmire. One person brings in one consultant report, another person brings in something else and says something else and says the tower improves property values because it provides a service, and others might complain because of visual impacts or whatever. There's got to be other ways to... There are other ways to regulate wireless facilities that don't have to include that you could still get the same result, but you don't need to use... Property values.
I guess one thing I'll say at this point to try to help keep something in perspective, there's thousands of lots out there. There's only going to be a few towers. I mean, it just seems kind of out of balance here. There's just a few of these darn things. And there's thousands of lots. The ratio to me seems it's starting to get a little bit difficult, obviously.
So if you're already living there, this is your home that you've been in for how many years, you know, and a new facility goes up 300 feet from you. There's no regulation protecting you from that, just giving you a little distance. You know,
it's not on your property.
I just want to say, you know, I kind of point you to something that I prepared that's in your hands, which is talking about several court cases where they absolutely agree that property values is a legitimate criteria to question whether a particular location is least intrusive.
1%? 10%?
Of what?
Property value degradation. I mean,
no, it has to be. In one of the regulations, they said you can say anything you want. They said it has to be at least 3%. But no, the last one I read was between 10, depending, 10 and 40%. But 10%, yes.
40% value for it.
There was one. There was one. That was the upper one.
Yeah.
I think that's the way.
But here's AT&T Wireless versus City Council of Virginia Beach, where the court said the weight of neighborhood opposition in the petition and an opposition paper citing articles on reduced property values plus a photo of the balloon test was acceptable substantial evidence that led to a denial. In the Hohokus, New Jersey decision from the Third Federal Circuit Court.
Hold on one second. Can we go back to the Virginia one?
Yes.
There was a whole host of things there. There wasn't just any one thing. There was a whole host of things. You look at everything as cumulative of everything in there, then yes, by all means. But you're talking to say where everyone says, well, hey, no, look, we're on board with this, we like this, but yet this guy over here says, well, no, wait, you're gonna drop my property value by 10%. So no, it can't happen. And that's all subjective. And what he was saying there, if you looked at the Grants Christ newspaper yesterday, there was 5 pages of foreclosures. So you're telling me that they're not buying those properties over there because they don't want them because of the tower?
This has been going on
that's
for
ridiculous.
Years, you know. This down curve that you're talking about is a couple of years old. I'm talking double that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you haven't lived here for the last 5 years?
Well, yeah.
The economy in this area has turned down about 5 years ago.
Is there any state requirement, code, restriction, ordinance, or anything that deals with it, or is it just the TCA? And then does the TCA, is there any reference or recommendation or for or against property values?
Are we asking the guy in the phone?
It's quiet. I think this is the TCA. Is this a copy? Is this the TCA that you gave us? There's no... They are not limiting... They do not limit the local authority from using property values as a criteria for citing a
right.
cell tower.
But if I'm a local authority and somebody says my value is going to go down, I'm going to say, prove it to me.
Well, of course.
You're not going to be able to just walk in and start pitching and crying.
Of course not.
There's got to be some validation and some facts
right.
behind it.
Right, and so the courts are telling you what facts, at least so far, have been approved. One is an assessor's, a registered assessor's organization, them having a report. The other one is the courts talk about what is actual evidence.
Right, and I think that should come back down to a case-by-case basis. I don't think that should be a baseline, in my opinion.
And that was one example of one place. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands across the country. I just read one example of Virginia Beach. It's just...
I can give you 4 examples now, but you don't seem to want to hear it. I could go back and get more examples.
In Oregon?
I have a...
I would prefer, if you have something from Oregon, I would prefer if you email that to me.
Not in this area, like... Oh,
I could really care less about New York and Virginia.
Virginia's
good, but I do care about Oregon.
Not trash more.
And how about maybe Washington or Colorado?
What we're really talking about...
Oregon, yes, I really do care about Oregon.
But what we're talking about is whether property values is a legitimate... thing to regulate
it's
on.
Subjective though. It is so subjective to say because you like Fords, I like Chevrolet. I mean, it's so subjective. It's really, really hard to
go ahead and
chime in. Yeah. Before making my amendments to the draft, and I see my note on it should it's my page 14, I'm not sure if it's yours. regarding 3B about the assessor says appraising for diminution of value of surrounding properties, but difficult as a circumstance in this case. Connie Roach is our county assessor, and I can certainly extend an invitation to her to come in and talk about some of the issues. She does know quite a bit about assessments and property values and how the county looks at it to get the assessor's perspective in a future subcommittee meeting. If you'd like me to do that, I'd be more than happy to invite her. I'm sure she would attend.
Okay.
What would you be asking her again?
To attend our meeting and talk about...
workshop.
One of these meetings, subcommittee meeting, to talk about property values, how to measure them, how to go about this. She gave me a methodology on how you would do it and what would be involved, and then some of the pitfalls of that, some of the advantages, some of the objective things and some of the subjective things. There's a lot of subjectivity to it, but I think if the assessor can come in and explain how they look at it, either with one of their appraisers or Connie herself, I'm sure she'd be more than happy to attend.
That sounds like a great idea. Because it's just too subjective.
I don't think there are any certified real estate appraisers in the room, but there are appraisers who have. So that's one way to at least get an expert opinion on that.
It's too subjective.
Agreed from the committee?
Yes.
Make a phone call?
Yes.
Okay.
I think one of the issues that, you know, we're grappling with is, yes, people have different opinions. You know, like, for example, you might say, you know, I don't even care if it's on my property. That means I'm going to get great reception, you know. And I represent, you know, 86% of one community, which I'm sure there are people, you know, so another segment of the population, which says, you know, I live in this county, too. And, you know, sure, I can choose if I'm going to buy a house, you know, very close to a cell tower, you know, and if I can handle that visual or whatever, you know. But if I already have a home, you know, to have one put, you know, what, the 200 feet from my home, it, you know, that isn't appropriate. You know, that I want to be considered as well. I want to be considered as much as the person who's of the other opinion. And that's what we grapple with, I think.
And to respond to that, and I think that's a really good way to characterize the crux of the matter when it comes to siting cell towers. You've got people that are coming in, or a cell tower's coming in, they've already positioned their house, they've got their view of the river, the mountains, or whatever, and now they're looking at something that's going to obstruct that view. And that is something that, you know, can be addressed in criteria, siting criteria, and we can focus on those sorts of issues in siting criteria. And so, you know, remember, we're going to be in a quasi-judicial hearing on a new structure. Co-location for a couple of other minor things, new antennas on an existing tower, we're at a ministerial permit. And the while a person from 500 feet away may be able to see that new set of antennas, they're not going to be notified in the ministerial review. They would be in a quasi-judicial review. And people can comment as well.
And you're going to run across that on, well, we do it on everything.
So,
I mean, I didn't like when my neighbor put the house right in front of me and I'm looking at them out my kitchen window. They didn't like it when they put the new bridge in across the river.
Right. One thing to think about, too, to be able to capture people, if you wish, and because of the height of towers and because they are kind of a unique land use, is to look at a greater notice area. What's our notice area right now on a quasi-judicial? It's 250?
It depends.
Depends on the zone.
It depends on the zone.
On the zone?
If it's one lot resource, then it's 750.
If people come in and object, it's like, what does it matter if people come in and say, you know?
Well, the siting criteria means that you're not going to be a visual impact, and you find that in a particular way to surrounding properties, then you've got criteria to meet.
I'm sorry, say that again.
You've got a criteria to meet if you say that one of the criteria to meet is that shall not pose an adverse visual impact to surrounding property owners.
That would be good.
And conditional use criteria, that's pretty common language. And you come in and you are within the visual sight of that tower. And then you have a discussion about where that tower can be moved within their propagation area, within the search ring.
I mean, once
that's
again,
not going to propose that visual impact.
Once again, it's subjective about what different people consider visual impact. You know, again, what different people feel is going to affect property values. You know, it's subjective, and I feel like everything that we're doing, we're now reverting back to favoring the industry, you know, or favoring half of the population as opposed to the other half of the population that say, you know, the telecommunication, you know, the federal law says we have to have these things. We have to have them. We have to have them everywhere. There can be no gaps in service, however that's defined. So the people who feel differently say, okay, federal law says we have to have them, but keep them at a certain distance from us. We don't want to be looking at it. We don't want to affect our property values. You know, there's also, you know, another issue of perception of harm and how that affects property values that has been substantiated in some courts, not Oregon that I know of, because I haven't, you know, looked there. You know. So it's like,
well,
What about those, that other group of people?
Williams that wanted the tower there.
Yeah. We're not saying no service. We're just saying we're saying co-locate instead of putting it there.
A question for the industry, either Steve or Taz or Paul. Given the differences between objective criteria and subjective criteria, such as that in a conditional use scenario, what do you think favors industry? Objective or subjective?
Subjective, I would think, yeah. Depend on their attorneys. Seriously,
I think objective.
I don't understand the questions.
Yeah,
try to find subjective.
Paul?
Yeah, what do you mean by objective or subjective?
Objective dimensional standards that have no subjectivity or citing criteria. Is that
I think you're wondering which one favors the industry more?
Yes.
I think maybe subjective, just because it's looser, so you could be too objective, then it you could really box yourself in and get into some problems.
And again, I'm not giving you a particular standard when I'm saying objective. I'm just saying if you know what your dimensional standards are, and it's a standards-only review, and there's no subjective criteria, do you feel that that's in favor to an industry or not?
Oh, definitely. Wording it that way, definitely.
I mean, it's nice because it lays out the rules, but there's always exceptions, so.
I mean,
good for it's easier to understand, but.
I'm seeing a pretty obvious divide to me between citizens typically want things to be more subjective because then there are citing criteria. They can bring in things like the visual impact of their particular property. So even though a tower might meet the 200-foot setback, it's going to be right in their view line between their house and Mount Hood. And therefore, that's not a standard that you're going to cover in an objective dimensional way, but you will in a subjective standard. Subjectivity and criteria, such as conditional use criteria, typically bring the public into the discussion. And I can say that as a land use planner for 20 years.
Will you say that again?
What happens. Subjective criteria, such as that in a conditional use criteria, is a mechanism to bring the public to the table to make land use decisions. And that's just what criteria do. James, you can chime in at any time. Objective criteria are typically done on matters that are fairly uncomplicated, that have clearly defined boundaries. Are setbacks in urban areas, do you know what they're based on? The ability to get a fireman and his equipment between two buildings. That's what it's based on. And that is objective for a good reason. We don't vary it. It's not negotiable. And so I would urge you to think about in writing this ordinance, where are those areas where we know what the objective standard should be and limit those, but in subjective criteria, let's think about what our values are and how we write those into citing criteria and then give a clear path of process to come to some conclusions about individual applications. Speech is over.
That's neat.
That makes a lot of sense. And like I said, this all started because we didn't understand what the actual distance was and getting the understanding changes how we view things and how we look at it. So.
Well, seeing that is part of the problem. A setback of 1,500 feet, 1,200 feet, 5,000 feet, 10 miles is subjective. It's into the eye of the beholder as to what they believe is going to hurt their property values, be harmful as far as health concerns, going to be aesthetically pleasing. Every time I go on a trip, my son, he looks at bridges, he looks at towers, he looks at anything that's made out of steel. That's what he does. He builds things, and he just loves looking at that stuff. My other son, doesn't want to look at it. I'm going to go to Florida. I can't stay in the mountains. I don't even want to be here. I'm going to go somewhere where it's flat. So these are two kids that grew up in the exact same house, and they have two completely different views of what they're looking at. And it's tough, you know, regardless of what industry you're in, whether you're in where you work indoors all day long, or I work 140 feet up sometimes, it's tough to say, yeah, we need to put this in there because 87% of Williams is going to agree with it. Well, what about 100% of Cape Junction says, no, I don't want that? Or what about, you know, the just outlying northwest areas of Grants Pass, just the opposite of Williams says, no, well, 86%, 87% of us, we agree with having it right there on our doorstep. That's why I agree with what he's saying. I'd rather be objective than subjective. I'd rather have something in here. And if you come to me and you say, look, Tez, these are the rules and regulations for what you have to do, then this is what we abide by. But when you talk and you say, well, I want this 1,500 feet because of property values, when you actually, because for the last 5-6 months, I know what you mean, and I know you mean RF, and I know it's not put here in black and white, but I know what you mean RF. To me, it doesn't make any sense. I don't think that the people that are giving their basis of opposition to how far away the tower is, when they're saying that property values or aesthetics, when they actually truly mean in their minds, because I don't want that radiation for that, I don't think that they have been given the proper information on RF. And I think that they're going with, well, this study here and this study here. When you're in the industry,
fear factor.
When you're in the industry and you're working around the stuff daily, and then you see what someone else says about it, it's and no offense, it's moronic.
And all I can say at this point is this: I know this. Knew this was going to be a very difficult situation, totally time-consuming, totally subjective, but all I can say is this. It's my belief that to satisfy a carrier on coverage area, gap, fill-in, need be, call it what you want, that they would be able to locate the thing far enough from a given residence to, this is the subjective point, to satisfy the visibility impact and still satisfy their coverage area. My point is this, is if here's a tower and here's a house, and they're pretty darn close, you're going to see it. My assumption at this point is that the tower, to satisfy the huge gap, which relatively speaking, the service size would be off this page, but they could put it over here and still get very similar performance in coverage, and it's significantly away from the house. Again, that's subjective, but my point is the visual tapers off pretty quick and the coverage goes out miles. It seems to me that on a voluntary basis they wouldn't put it where it's going to be an eyesore.
But it's not true. AT&T wanted to put 130 feet in front of one house, and it was less than 100 feet. I think it was 80
uh-huh.
feet, right? You know, the actual front porch view into the valley.
Well, listen, how do we go about...
So you have a subjective criteria that said something like this. Siting criteria, you know, 2C or whatever, shall minimize the distance to all existing residences within, you know, the propagation area within the search ring, and shall minimize visual impacts.
Visual impacts.
If it was convenient.
Of a given site. And you can have different ways of doing that. You can relocate the tower. You can screen it. You can camouflage it. You could. But it's. And again, that's that blend again of trying to. For those standards that are subjective in their. And how people are going to view them. You put in siting criteria. For those things that are dimensional, where we know what we mean, and we don't mean anything different, and there really is no area for subjectivity, like what permit process something is going to be
subject to any kind of setbacks or standards. If we say a minimum dimensional standard shall be the height of the tower, beyond that, we're going to look at the siting criteria and move it around the propagation area to try to minimize visual impacts,
yeah,
minimize impacts to property values, and minimize impacts to whatever else.
It would be the burden of the carrier to prove why they can't go elsewhere.
So
down
you
the road.
Start with a minimum setback, and then from there, your setback may be increased depending upon minimizing some of these other impacts. But that's the subjective part of the exercise.
I mean, that thread sounds good in terms of what did you say, minimizing the distance to the existing residences, for example. You
right.
said, I guess where we differ is what the initial setback is.
Right.
I mean,
you
I think the tower
off
height.
You might start off with the height of tower, you might start off with 200 feet as a
And I think that's inadequate just to even start there. That's what I'm saying. So the question still is, what do you start
with?
You start
with X.
Okay.
Call it X for you, okay? You start with X. And then from there, you may hide it, you may increase the setback, you may have to do something different, but at least you've got your map of blue dots. It opens up a bigger area for you to work within, and then you look at individual impacts to properties and residences and schools.
You
can
even write something in that says that it will not impact the visual, somebody's view, you know, from their house. You can put that in there.
Difficult,
of course. So that would make it more standard if you have, you know, a X setback, and then you say, and then it will minimize these things.
I think it's a blend of the two,
mm-hmm.
the industry need for some objectivity so they know where they stand,
mm-hmm.
and then at the same time, when they look at properties, if they're looking at a minimum setback that maybe they could meet, but they're in a more dense area of, say, some 2-acre zoning where houses have gone on several of the properties, a nearby area, 5-acre zone, might look more attractive because they're going to not run into those subjective standards on minimizing visual impacts and distance to
mm-hmm.
residences.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
we still have to siting the X, you know, and then the other issue that impacts that really important, which we've discussed in the document we sent out, is how you figure a search ring there. Really, we talked about this last time a little bit, but there are some very subjective things that get kind of hidden when an applicant creates the search ring map. You know, they're not telling you what megahertz they're using to create that. They're not telling you what their criteria is for...
But we're requiring independent RF engineering review, which...
Well,
those kind of things have to be...
True.
The information that has to be laid out by the...
Well, none of that, one section gets to another. That gets to the section that we've submitted in terms of what, and it answers your agenda items, what materials to provide an independent RF engineer, visual impact screening,
right.
propagation maps. That's where we talk about, there's a whole section about what's required in an application so that the independent RF engineer can adequately really assess that isn't in there yet.
Right. And I'm thinking that for ordinance language, we can make some general statement about what that is. Remember, this is just the ordinance. This is a controlling document. The county can come up with a handbook for, you know, wireless facility siting manual that says, we like this better than we like this. We like this kind of screening better than this kind of screening. Steve mentioned last time, you know, painting the tower a camouflage, which is an exercise in frustration because you can see the thing miles away whether it's camouflaged or not.
Yeah, the only time that does any good is if it is in a forest as a backdrop and you paint it green. Otherwise, if it's out in the open, it doesn't matter what color you see it.
Right.
Or if it's
yeah.
or if it looks like
yeah.
a tree, because there's one that's going
right.
to be, we're going to get that looks like a tree, but it's in the middle of a field.
That is something that this subcommittee can recommend, which is to, you know, devise a manual, and I've seen those in other jurisdictions on cell towers and other kinds of facilities where you devise a manual that says, here's how we're going to address that, and you can require substantial compliance with the county's, you know, wireless
mm-hmm.
communication siting manual.
But now I'm talking about, we haven't gotten to that subject yet, but
and,
the application requirements.
And that could be a list of, more specific list of what an RF engineer is going to require for his review.
Mm-hmm.
and that can happen in the manual as well. As long as you've got the requirement in there for an independent review and some general language about what's required, then you can go into more specifics in a manual or a checklist or some other document that our engineer can come up with.
So you're saying not all the exactly the kind of maps you want, exactly the kind of site map you want, exactly that doesn't have to be in the ordinance itself?
You don't have to be so down to the details in the ordinance. You can make general reference, and then the county can produce a checklist and says, here's what we mean. By
here's what we want.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You can't do that.
So it's the X that is still the issue.
Yeah. Right. But the X, Siobhan's X. Like I said, and what Paul said at the beginning of the meeting, that X has to be a quantitative number that can be validated and backed up, not just something picked out of the hat. And we have to have some reasoning and some realistic behind it.
Let me ask one thing here, because I tend to get a little bit overloaded and slow sometimes. The setback is from property boundaries, not a residence. I heard earlier that it's difficult to do it from a residence because you don't know exactly where they are in this GIS thing and all. Is that true? Or am I did I really blow it on that?
Tess was asking about these setbacks. That's from property line. For those jurisdictions.
Yeah, okay.
And that is traditionally, when we talk about setbacks, we're talking about from a property line.
Okay. Because the variable or the aspect of property line versus residence is huge when you consider the visual aspect. The property line could be so darn far out that if a tower was further out from that property line, you'd never see it. Again,
right.
It's really critical to understand residence and property line,
and you can,
in a visual aspect, there's a huge difference there.
You can, and you can refine setbacks. I mean, some jurisdictions are doing it by adjacent zones. Here's, say, the subject property, and we're going to call that a 5-acre property. And we've got maybe some 1-acre properties over here, 1.5s. And this is in an R5 zone. Adjacent to that, we've got a woodlot resource zone. And we've got our one zone here.
Which is some RR's residential, some
rural residential.
Yes. Residential.
These are all residential. Like this ground. Is a resource zone, and say this one is another RR5 zone up here, and then we've got, something else over here, whatever is up. Oh, let's call it something.
Make it a farm or a forest, just to add it more complicated.
Yeah, woodlot resources.
Oh.
Essentially that.
Farm.
We'll call this one
commercial.
We're going to call this one RC.
Oh.
Okay. And this RC has got a business on it, and the owner doesn't want to go for it, but it's within the search ring. So now we're going to shoot for that 5-acre property. You can go straight setback, and you could just say, well, our setback is going to be height of tower plus 50 feet. It's a 120-foot tower, so 170 feet is what we're looking at. So 170-foot buffer then goes in around this 5-acre property, and it's to all areas. Front setback.
I thought that
you could exclude the setback to a road if you want it, but you might say 170 feet to all property lines. One way to do it. Another way to do it is you could say, like we do for residences, you have a different rear yard setback from front yard setback from side yard setback. You could do that.
Okay.
You could also make it a reflection of we want a 100-foot setback, and I'm just throwing out a number, X. X is 100. 100-foot setback plus the applicable setback from whatever these adjacent zones are.
What's that mean? What's it mean?
If the RR1 setback is a 20-foot side yard, then your setback here is 100 plus 20.
Gotcha, okay.
If your setback in the RC zone is 10 feet, then your setback is 110. There was some language elsewhere in the draft
that said something like respect the other zone setback. I think what you meant was apply the other zone setback. But those are different methods that I saw in how these some of the other jurisdictions operate.
Okay, so those setbacks.
Because what they're doing is rather than saying tower height plus 1 feet, when it says base zone in any of those, what you're talking about are these different. So if the base zone RR5 is a 20-foot rear yard setback and a 10-foot side yard setback and a 25-foot front yard setback, and those are the.
So if we take
the same setbacks that apply to a residence would apply to this.
If we do safety setback plus base zone, then that would mean that, okay, so from the RC, we already know that we have to be 150 feet. If it's a 100-foot tower, we have to be 150 feet away from a structure. So then for them, we had to add another 10 feet for that, so that would make it 160 feet.
Yeah.
I don't have an issue with that. So
those are different ways to apply setbacks, and that's the objective thing.
Yeah.
And then you can have the X, that's your X factor. And then you can have a siting criteria that, okay, now we've got, I'm pointing at my drawing a little bit.
Would this hold any sense at all that if the carriers have started to build out from, say, the populated areas outward, is it safe to say the outward areas tend to be larger lots? Or is that not necessarily true?
Could be.
Pretty much true,
huh?
We're a concentric.
Yeah, so the further out we get where the carriers are trying to go, we have additional large lot space that gives, well, less flexibility, I guess, for the carrier, if I'm thinking right. Where does that get us? That fact that the larger lots will be where the carriers don't want to go.
It may be a wash. You've got a bigger setback. You've also got more property to deal with. So
Yeah,
might be a move.
Thanks for that, residences.
Right. So we were going to get to...
be a wash. Interesting.
What was your point, Cass? Sorry.
Well, we have a safety step back right now. And the tower has to be tower height plus 50 feet away from any livable structure.
Okay.
That was agreed upon by everybody.
Right.
The tower height plus 50 feet away from any livable structure.
No, away from property line. The next property line.
And that should be relatively easy to do.
That's the one, the setback we already have for.
Right.
How does that differ?
Because
that doesn't say anything about residences. It doesn't say anything about schools.
Tower height plus 50 from a residence means that you get to use part of their setback.
Well, that's what I thought that we agreed upon was the tower height plus 50 feet from any livable structure is what I thought we agreed upon.
No.
Okay.
Well, so. Why did we do tower height plus 50 feet away from property line? Is that not a setback?
Is it a property line setback?
That's the setback from the property lines, but then there's additional thing about from particular uses, which is the residences, the schools, the public parks.
Why? Why did we need a 50 foot away from a property line for safety? The whole point of that 50 feet was for safety in case the tower collapsed.
True.
Yeah, that was all about tower collapse.
And I care if the tower collapsed and it hits my property line?
Uh-huh. If your house is just over the property line, you care.
Well, Dr. Fotis, part of the reason that looking at the adjacent setback is a good idea. I want to address that real quick. If you've got...
That's what we're talking about.
I misunderstood.
Yeah.
Excuse me. My
mistake.
You get two properties there. One's got a house, and the other one doesn't. And your setback is going to be tower height plus 50 feet from a residence or whatever that this might be.
You're seeing those from property line.
It's going to be different on here.
I'm sorry. Clearly, you're talking to me, and I'm kind of at my limit also. So, if this is important to talk to me, could you start again?
Okay.
So I can really try to focus in.
Okay. I'm talking to everybody.
Okay.
Anyway. The difference is if it's from a residence, then you've got, 50 feet, and then you've got your tower height.
What, I don't know, what are you talking, a proposed regulation? You're talking about what's in the thing now, or
what? Let's just compare now. Comparing two different setback scenarios. One is from a residence, tower height plus 50 feet. You've got the inability for that tower and a structural fall to hit a residence. It's not going to hit it. Uh-huh. And you've got a better likelihood of a visual screening, or it's not as much in your face. It's 50 feet further away. The problem with going tower height with 50 feet plus residence is, what if you don't have a residence?
The problem with going 50 feet plus from a residence?
Tower height plus to a residence. What if you don't have a residence?
So you don't have anything about the property line.
Now you've got a tower height plus 50 feet to a residence.
Well, we...
That's
why we had a property line setback, which was a separate issue than the special, setback from particular uses. So.
What I'm saying is that there's a difference. If you're going to make it to a residence, then you've got your tower height plus 50 feet. If you're going to make it to a residence, to a property that has no residence, then that's going to look a lot different. Because then, do you want to just put in to your setback plus the tower height? Whatever the setback is on that property, because that precludes the potential, Steve's got it, the potential residents going in there, then is assured of the same kind of setback that this guy's going to have.
Yeah, the residents
would have the same setback. So what it does, Siobhan, is try to capture setbacks for potential residents. If you just say it's tower height plus any distance to a residence, you're not addressing the guy that doesn't have a residence.
But we had addressed that. There were two different sections. We had addressed that.
Get away from what you said there
for
just a second and think about the difference on how you're going to construct this.
Because the new residence has his own setback, so that precludes him from getting any closer. He's already got that
right
to his property boundary. So that's built in. It's an additional buffer.
Right. Two different ways of administering it. For my staff, it makes it easier to just say, we're going to have whatever this is, and we're either going to go tower height plus the adjacent setback, or we're going to go tower height to the property line, or we're going to go tower height plus 50 plus adjacent setback. I mean, we can construct it a lot of different ways. But if you just make it to a residence, you're not covering, my concern is, again, for future residences, you're not covering the future resident that hasn't built this house yet.
And for me, residents,
we're going to come up with X, whatever it is, an objective standard, and if that's going to be our primary criteria, I would like to include those people that haven't built their house yet.
So currently, right now, it says the minimum setback from our property lines from proposed facilities shall be 50 feet plus the permanent design height. In no instance shall a PCS facility or support structure be sited closer to any property line than this distance. So that's what we have in there at the moment.
That's what I've been
misinterpreting what we did here.
And I don't have an issue with this. The adult site, please don't cite this as a safety issue.
Page 5.
I thought that we were putting in number tower height plus 50 feet from a livable structure for safety features, if we have an issue with the tower collapse. I understand what you're saying there about someone who hasn't built their, and I totally agree with that. I don't want the tower within 50 feet, the tower height plus 50 feet of any livable structure, period. I don't want it to be able to where it could actually be within 50 feet of a livable structure, because I don't want someone getting hurt.
Which is why we put that one in.
Which is fine. The way that I thought it was interpreted was that this section that we put in was actually for the residence part, and that the second section that we were working on was for outlying areas, not for the actual property that the tower is on. Obviously, you're not going to be able to put the tower next to somebody else's house,
or where someone else can build a house. So and I don't have an issue with that either.
I love the way you're saying it. It sounds like we are. It sounds like you were understanding correctly.
I don't want somebody hurt physically.
Right. So that's why that part you were in agreement with.
Yes.
You know, scenic byways was the last compromise we made where I agreed to take protection for scenic byways out so that you... I took the scenic byways out and you agreed with the 1500. That's kind of was the last negotiation that we did.
And I agreed with the 1500 initially, but I don't agree with it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd be curious how Lane County is doing with their ex.
We have new information than we did when we set that 1500. That's critical.
And I have a little hard time with kind of the sort of give and take philosophy because everything really needs to stand on its own behalf. I understand it's a workable thing around a table with humans, but it's still, I've always had a hard time every time you said that.
Let me ask you a question.
Well, me it was like, oh, so this is how it works. That's what I came to. Oh, this is interesting. This is how it works.
I never went there at all. Mm-hmm. This is how it works. Issues.
Do you mind if I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
You said you're interested in how Lane County's working. Why are we not interested about Clackamas County, Klamath County, Benton County, Polk County, Washington County, where there they have lower...
The Lane County is a challenging one. You know, Lane's got the one that would challenge. I'm curious, you know, because Lane's got the one that would challenge.
If we're not having any issues from the way that the setbacks are set from the other counties, why do we have to be as extreme as Lane County?
Because the 1500 is closer to 1200 than it is to 200.
That doesn't answer my question.
But if the 15 is coming from RF, it doesn't matter. So it's a moot point.
Well, this is what I'm saying. If we're not having any issues with the way Lincoln does theirs or Polk does theirs, why do we have to be as extreme as Lincoln?
We don't have to be. I guess, you know, I'm representing a segment of the population that just doesn't want to see this thing that close, doesn't want the effect that they believe has on their property values. You know, we know we have to have them because the federal law says whether you want it or not, every gap has to be filled, however that gets defined. You know, there's a certain segment of the population, and it would be curious if any other of the areas within Josephine County has done a town vote or a sector vote to find out how people feel. We're probably the only ones who've done that vote, so that's the only reason that we know the numbers.
But there's a
large segment of the county population that wants distance from these things.
Well, and I think we all at this table agree no one wants it right literally in their backyard or out the front door kind of thing. And that's back to the visual thing. Dave alluded to some of the options that we would have, how it could be phrased. I don't know, go back to mitigation or impact visual. But if we could just zero in on however we set it up as general criteria for visual, and like you said, it could be dealt with to a further degree after. But I'm all for that visual thing as far as an X value. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I know we could all agree that much. Mm-hmm. How do we identify what's just as for visual even?
So the mutual thing would be what would be the largest X that wouldn't, you know, look at a map and feel like we're prohibiting, you know, any power from being there.
There's that way of going about it, I suppose.
Davey.
Shrinking the blue, in other words, I guess.
Right.
I'm not sure I want to detract the discussion you're having right now, but what one of the things in the lanes that we have under G2 setback limitation on page 5,
mm-hmm.
In all zones other than commercial and industrial, the minimum setback from an existing residential dwelling unit, blah, 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 would be not less than 1,500 feet. Not less than X, we're going to say for now, okay? In all zones other than commercial and industrial.
Oh, that's right.
Am I okay right there? Yes or no? Nope, I'm going to be 50 feet plus total design height, right?
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Correct.
So our protection there is going to be 50 feet plus tower height. If I'm in a roof zone. Right?
Not. Are you talking about the way this is current? I'm so confused here. No, it's setback from the boundary. it goes back into the RR5. If you're talking about a tower in that RR5, the tower height plus 50 doesn't go into the commercial. Oh, I see. Because it says that it's owned...
In all zones, the minimum setback, other than commercial industrial,
I see
the big setback is 1,500 feet. Now I've got a residence in this adjacent RR5 property. So my minimum setback from all property lines shall be 50 feet plus total permanent design height. So because my tower is in an RC district, this property owner gets treated differently. That's my point.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't do anything back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's done that way now, though. On commercial property, you can build up to the property line.
Mm-hmm.
I know in Cube Junction, that's the way it is. If you have a piece of property that's commercial, you can build up to the property line. If it's
you'll find unequal treatment riddled throughout zoning codes. Mm-hmm. I'm just posing a question to you.
Okay.
Do you want to standardize that more?
Well, I think the compromise that we made with that is that when you live in a commercial area, then you're more apt to understand that things like this are going to happen more so than if you're in a residential area. Is that what we can?
Okay. Almost sounds like a planning department finding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that for whatever, and I pass you lead right in. We're arranging about it, and that is that when we think about. Each one of these standards, I would suggest to you think like you're going to the Planning Commission with a finding as to what backs that up. And if it's different than another way we're treating another property or a different setback that someone else is going to be subject to or it's going to be a siting criteria, justify it. Why is that? Yes, we do treat properties that are adjacent to commercial,
mm-hmm.
they get more impacts because they're adjacent to commercial. Do their property values go down? Perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Do their potential property values go up? You bet. If they get rezoned to RC too.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, I realize we're struggling a little bit how you can justify some of our means here, our end means if we get at it. But what, like Savannah said, we're still struggling to get an X value, and that ultimately will reduce a lot of this blue, which is wiping out all of our possibilities. Now, I realize that we're not wanting to ask a lot of favors out of the Southern Department that creates this thing, but is it as simple as a database that already exists and they can just throw in another number, an X that we come up with, and we can see the map change, a lot of that blue go away, and maybe we say like 400, and bingo, it's not a big deal to see what that did.
Yeah, at what point, if the X changes, at what point does the map get
So for purposes of the subcommittee, to see another blue dot map, we'll call it.
Is that a value?
We'll add a few values.
Give us some numbers.
I start with 250. Height of tower. Maximum height of tower was 200.
50. I mean, let's go up by 250. It depends how, if it's just programming, you know, 250, 500, 750, 1,000, 1,250.
Yeah, maximum height of tower plus 50.
Yeah, maximum tower can be 200 and then plus 50.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see it at every 250 and see where it really...
General agreement?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. We've got to come up with something that's a little more realistic.
I mean, yeah, the more numbers you give me, the bigger lunch I'm going to have to buy Cody. But the more beers I'm going to have to buy Cody.
If we get somewhere, I'll buy the beer.
I'm in it pretty deep already.
Question or statement.
Sure. I have a point. I think you and I are on the Rural Planning Commission. We're going to hear this on Monday night, the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
Are you actually ready to bring this to them? I don't think we are.
No.
So do we need to defer that to another date?
We can't defer it. We still have to have it because it's not necessary.
It's a workshop.
Notice. Okay.
It's a workshop.
The workshop.
Not a hearing.
Yeah, we're not having a hearing on this. We're having a workshop.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
but isn't it on the agenda?
No, before the planning meeting.
Okay.
So basically, it's just updating the planning commission.
Right. That's July 20th.
No, that's June
20th. It is June 20th.
Yeah. It's a
Monday night.
Workshop, July 25th is a hearing. Hope I'm back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. July 25th.
No, I'm here the 20th. I'm down the 25th.
In presenting the issue to the planning commission, I have workshop.
Ron will be there, I'll be there, Vivian will be there as well, is to introduce, to introduce that, you know, we have some issues that are still being hammered out by the subcommittee.
Yeah.
And even though we've got a number, and I don't, you know, one way we can kind of mask what the number is to put an XXX if we want, or just, you know, put in a 000, put no number in there. I don't have a problem telling them what you've already passed, what's already in your draft, and just highlight for the Planning Commission that that issue is still being hammered out.
Yeah, they'll have an opportunity to give a quick input that they won't be really passionate about either, but they can, you know, hey, you know,
we're not going to have the revised blue dot maps available for them. I don't think we're going to, I didn't plan on giving them the blue dot map at all.
Yeah.
Because it's an issue that's
unresolved. Right, but I want to bring the one we have now with the 1500, and then we'll have the variant when we get to that point, so we'll have a reference.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Bring the blue dot map we have at the moment, and then with our other reference points, so we'll be able to see a realistic value of you can do this, you can't do this.
When is it?
No, when we get that. The next meeting. Okay. Moving on. Other matters.
After 5.
Yeah. So I'm going to run through them. Other matters. Anyone have anything else?
Well, at some point, I'm going to have to bring up, as I continue to read edited things, suggested things, at some point, I'm going to bring up a couple of minor things about safety. There may not be the time, but at some point.
Okay.
And I, you know, we created one document comment, you know, with our input on the second half.
Okay.
And another document that's kind of going with a subsection of that.
We're also going to be adding a section that we kind of overlooked, and it needs to be in there, and that's time limits, the federal time limits for how quickly we need to get these applications done. We've talked about that.
Yeah, ministerial permits are limited to
90 days.
Yeah. Right now we do them for ministerial permits in less than 60 days. I'm not worried about that timeline. Quasi-judicial applications are 150, and we do them in 150 anyway. So,
okay.
I think it's kind of a moot point, but if the TCA, if any objections from
it's required
when the wireless folks are going to be there, then we can put it in there. Because
okay.
it does have a federal statute that will rule.
I see no issue or reason for not. Comments? We'll get some in real quick, Monique.
Hey, I just have a question. You're going to go back and ask them to redo the map with the blue areas. Did you guys decide, are you going to ask them to do the map from residences still or from property lines? Was any decision determined if that second number X that's being discussed is going to stay from structure or property line?
It has to be from property line, no, but you can do it from residence.
I was trying to say you can ask him for lots of different.
Yeah, what I was planning on, Monique, is just to, and again, give us a general idea of what coverage would look like or not look like. And because he's already got the merged databases, I'm just going to go with what we got, and what we used was from relevance.
Yeah, right. Good point.
Keep it consistent, so we'll have the reference and won't change.
No easy way to go back and do it from property line, because that's really what the reality of it would be.
I don't think we can do it from the property line. Map it out that way.
But
I don't think you can go that direction.
Still not from structure, there's going to actually be a little bit more buffer left in there from property line if the wording does end up changing to property line from structure. Which everyone should be able to
correct.
Kind of look at and see that
correct.
There's still going to be a little more buffer
right.
there for mm-hmm. every property owner and every homeowner.
Correct.
There'll be
yeah.
a built-in buffer that they didn't see.
Right.
Okay.
That was brilliant.
Steve?
I just wanted to point out one thing as far as like using tower height plus 50 feet. You know, a lot of these towers, like for instance the one they put up at North End of town, is a fairly low tower, which could be added on to later.
Mm-hmm. And that hasn't been discussed as far as, like, you know, starting out with a 70-foot tower and later on want to have a 200-foot tower.
That was discussed on the previous meeting. We discussed that.
If they go in and they put in an application, they want a 100-foot tower, and they put that tower 150 feet away from a church, and they come back and say, well, we want to make it bigger. No, you can't, because you don't have a setback. So you can't make it taller.
Right.
So then it gives them the right to put up another...
If they need more capacity, then I'm wondering if we're shooting ourselves in the foot.
I think that was a good point. If we're shooting ourselves in...
You have to give them coverage.
Yeah.
Right. That's the manner of the part. So I don't see how, if, under mandate, that you have to give them coverage, you know, allow them to make the coverage. You know, I don't see how you can stop them from adding to the tower.
If we do anything based on tower height, I would use our maximum tower height, which is 200 feet.
And aren't we requiring to build a structure that's suitable for co-loading a certain amount anyway? That almost makes it not be a stub in the first place.
Right.
So well, that's kind of covering.
Okay, we're not allowing
it. It says, well, it doesn't matter, they can do a stub if they want, but it says right here what we just referenced on our setback, 50 feet plus total permanent design height.
Okay. So you've got 200 feet.
If they're going to go 200-foot tower, then they're going to have 250 feet. They're only going to go 100 feet.
But according to what you just said, if they're going to do a 70-foot tower, they got to do a setback according to the maximum height, 200 feet.
But in our regulation, we're saying they have to build a tower that will house, and we haven't decided, two or three other similar-sized installations. For other co-locations. So we're not going to be doing that kind of, I don't think.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, based on what he's saying and what we've already put in the ordinance is illegal, because he's saying, well, we have to make sure that they can be able to expand. Well, we've already set the tower height limit at 200 feet. So now you're telling me that you can't set that tower height at 200 feet?
No.
No, I'm saying you should.
What he's saying is they want to do a 70-foot tower.
But you got to use the 200 plus 50.
No, that's not what we're saying. We're saying is, okay, you're saying, okay, if I want to put in a 70-foot tower, I still have to use 250-foot setback. We have to build these things where they can co-locate, right?
Well, you have to guarantee them coverage.
Okay, so later on, if the population's gone up, they need more height. So later on down the road, if they want a 250-foot tall tower instead of 200-foot tall tower.
All means adjourned.
I thought 200 was the maximum.